Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamond, and you're listening to a podcast which is all about the Irish League. Friday night was all right for frighting, as we had a full schedule of games played on that ever-famous holiday, Friday the 13th, where the scariest thing that could have happened was a potential upset, as the established top and bottom six faced off against each other. We pull back the mask to review all of those spooky games, reflect on Euro 2028 coming to our shores, as well as look ahead to Game Week XIII on the latest edition of Kicking Match. Thank you very much for joining me here once again. Chatting away with you is one of, if not, my favourite part of my week. But as you well know, as much as we do have fun, and we do, I don't like to sit here chatting all by myself. So, claiming the chair this week, coming straight out of East Belfast, it's the host of the Shout of the Oval podcast. It's a first Kicking Match outing of the season for Matthew Brown.
Hello, Peter. Thanks very much for having me on. It's great to be back.
It is great to be back. It's good to be back because you're coming on to this podcast reeling on the tidal wave of enthusiasm that a 6-0 win at home gives you. I think before that game, I was hyping up where this could be a rather tough, cold October night for the Glens. But jumping straight into that one, that is as a triumphant victory as I've seen from Glentoran in a long while.
Yeah, it was very convincing. Loughgall were very poor, it has to be said. But the Glens were on it from minute one. High-pressing Glentoran team playing a 3-5-2 formation, which is seen today in the paper that Warren Feeney over the weekend, Warren Feeney said in the paper that it was his coaches came to him. So he didn't take credit for it. His coaches came to him and says, what about we try this formation? And he says, you know what, I've tried that once and maybe give it a go. And whoa, did it work. It was the Glens were in serious form. They really fancied it last night. Junior and Jay up front. I mean, I've said before, Junior's as good as anyone I've seen at the Oval playing that sort of hold up, knock down sort of position, and he was unplayable last night. He played like he very much did in that playoff final against Cliftonville that time. He was absolutely brilliant, and he really complimented Jay well. Really hard to pick out anyone that didn't have a good game, though, to be fair, and it was brilliant to see.
Who would have thought a return of an influential keystone at the back in McCullough would deliver so many goals? Listening to what Dean Smith was talking about, he kind of feels as though perhaps this result comes from playing so many games in so many weeks. They are a team who put down the gas pedal and just don't release it. And there was plenty of mistakes on their part. And the positives here for Glentoran is that after a dreadful couple of weeks, Warren Feeney and his team's task was to turn this around and start scoring goals, and they were able to do that with flying colours. You highlighted Junior's role within that victory. He was there making things happen, giving assists to other players, but I'm sure it must be good to see Donnelly coming in and getting a brace, and probably should have had a hat-trick from that, a chance as he had himself.
Yeah, Jay is a player that's given us a few false dawns over the sort of last 18 months where you sort of think when he scored one or two goals, you thought, right, he'll kick on here, and then it hasn't quite happened. Interesting to read the comments from Warren Feeney that Jay actually got asked to get taken off, so he's obviously still not 100%. He could have had a hat-trick. He was definitely going to, I'm pretty sure I put my neck in the line and said he was definitely going to get a hat-trick had he stayed on. Very unfortunate not to get one. You mentioned Luke McCall-Gary. He's just different class. He's got back into that form of his first season, and keeping him fit is absolutely pivotal for Glentoran, because he is such an important player. But there was good performances all over the pitch, and it was just great to see everyone chipping in. And I think that the Glens need to guard against consistency, I sort of said, or against complacency rather. I said to some of my friends last night that under Mick McDermott, the Glens regularly handed out sort of hammerings of teams, and then the next week they would falter. I went through some, and it was 2020-21, we beat Dungannon 5-1, then we lost 2-0 to the Crews, we beat Carrick 6-0, we drew 0-0 to Warren Point, we beat Portadown 4-0, we drew 2-2 with Ballymena. So there's all these results, and there's even more than that that goes on, that the Glens have hammered a team and then gone out the next week and dropped points. Last season, that didn't really happen as much. We did go out last season and we handed out a couple of 7-0s, a couple of 6-0s, and the Glens were sort of then went and backed it up the next week during that brilliant run at the start of the season. But it's nothing to get too carried away about, because on paper, suppose you see Glentoran full-time team playing Loughgall, who have just came up, probably should be beating them. But we all know that Loughgall have gone on the road and got some really important points this season. And it does have to be said, it is, I commented to my friend last night, without wanting to sound like Gary Hamilton, they did look like a team who had been at work all day and had, you know, came and played a full-time team. They were trying to play from the back. It wasn't working. It ended up becoming three passes and then a big hoof, and they just weren't. They posed very little threat. There was one save that Armacari had to make, and I think it was deflected on the way in, and that's about it, really. They were started to get really disgruntled, and there was a few choice words exchanged between them and Glentoran players, and yeah, but it was good from a Glentoran point of view.
They looked to be a team that, once they got those first two goals, the confidence just irradiated out of them. That's something they've been lacking. They've felt the pressure, and I know many Glentoran fans might disagree with this, but despite the results not being particularly great, the performances haven't been absolutely diabolical. This is a team who isn't in a great patch, but the issue that they're having compared to other teams at the top of the league who aren't getting great results is that Glentoran weren't scoring the goals to get them out of jail. Some other teams are having bad games, but they've scored two. That's probably the way Linfield have been going. When they haven't looked ferocious, they've at least scored enough goals to get a result. For Glentoran, many people would consider their attacking threat as one of their real strengths. McMenamin is clearly a huge loss for them, and they're still trying to find themselves. Has that been the most frustrating thing this season, the lack of goals?
Oh, the lack of goals has been very, very frustrating. There's been games there where the Glens could have played for 2 days and not scored. Linfield last week, Dungannon 0-0 at home. It's just been extremely frustrating. It's been the creativity as well. The Glens are obviously brought in the likes of Darragh O'Connor, who's new to the team. And I feel quite sorry for him. He hasn't had a natural right back playing in behind him, so there's no one to really overlap there. You've got James Singleton, who is, you know, he's been playing really well at right back. Like, Singo deserves all the credit in the world. He's been good, but he's not a natural right back, and he does look awkward sometimes. It's natural when you're playing on the wrong side. So missing Reece Marshall is an issue there for Darragh O'Connor. He's expected to defend a wee bit more, so the creativity isn't quite there, as well as some of the finishing hasn't quite been there yet, which is, it's disappointing, because I was crying out for a new centre forward in the summer. I was just thinking back to last season, because there was a wee spell under Rodney McAree where it was a bit similar. When Junior just came in, Jay wasn't really firing. Perkis, in my opinion, wasn't really up to sort of starting for Glen. He's doing really well this season, but when he started games for Glen,
is the issue there that you didn't ask Danny Perkis to shoot from 50 yards out? In hindsight, should Ronnie McAree have done that last season?
Yeah, the Johnny Black school of finishing, if you remember. He used to hit them from the halfway line when he's accordion. Yeah, that probably is the issue.
You miss all the shots you don't take.
But it is, the finishing that has been an issue. You do obviously miss that player cutting in from the left or the right, wherever Conor McMenamin plays, playing both sides, and scoring. And obviously, probably the best finisher. Obviously, Jay's a great finisher, but Niall McGinn's a great finisher, but don't know how far his legs will take him. And like I said, it's sort of like, I feel a bit sorry for him too. He's had good games and bad games, but I mean, his goal scoring record since coming to the Oval has been very good.
You touched on formation at the very start of the podcast there. This is something that I've been trying to get my head around. Glentoran are clearly not a box of misfit toys, but they have definitely been a collection of players where they see and they get and they want. And it's about bringing in quality. It's about bringing in established names. And that always doesn't create the most consistently flavoured jambalaya. And they've went through formations. As a fan, do you look at the players that you have and think, this is the formation that gets the best out of our team? Because people would look at Glentoran and think one of their strengths is having Soule, having Burns in the middle of the park, and Shane McCartan just in front of them. But I just, the frustration I've had watching Glentoran whenever I have is that it doesn't feel like they all complement each other quite right. It's like, it's a bit of a chemistry thing, and it's a bit of a using everybody's skills in the right place, and the dovetailing nature that you have to think about when you put together 11 players to play a game.
Yeah, that there is that sort of thing where you've got individuals maybe as opposed to the team. I joked last night, I said after McKendry got a 2 goals for Corian, I was like, I can't wait to see him struggle in a Glentoran shirt next season. And, you know, he wouldn't be the first one. Player does really well. We sign him and he just doesn't really, we don't really know how to use him. And the Glens have played a few formations this season. There was one earlier in the season where we played Ballymena and we played like a 4-2-4 with Shea McCartan getting this sort of free role, which really suits him. And he played it under Rodney McAree too. He sort of plays an attack when we've got possession, out of possession, he drops in the midfield. And I thought, well, that's the team. But then injuries meant that we had to sort of change formation. I don't know why we went into this sort of one up top, which was just total madness in my opinion. I don't think we're ever built for one up top. Sule, you mentioned Sule there. He was brilliant last night. Who knew he had it in his locker to take it to the byline, cut it inside and put a cross in like that for the first goal. Absolutely brilliant. Usually he gets in the attacking position, turns around and passes it to like a player behind him. But he put in 2 great crosses last night. So he does have it in his locker to go forward if he maybe has that confidence.
He absolutely does. He is stereotyped as this midfield destroyer. And of course, that's what he's really good at. Harden the tackle, looking for a pass sideways and letting players run on. But if you really look at his highlights in Larne last season and before that, he is actually quite dangerous, picking up pockets of space around the box, out wide, firing a ball in or just waiting for the right moment to let a player run on. And when you have Burns and McCartan in some sort of midfield trifecta, you're more than likely wanting Sule to be the bottom pivot of that. Perhaps last night was the awakening for Glentoran of maybe if we give him the ability to push forward a bit more and have a bit more of a playmaking role, then you can unlock more of the juice, because he hasn't been having the performances in a Glentoran shirt that many people saw when he was wearing the red of Larne, where people were hyping us up as one of the best players in the league. He's not just at that level yet, and I do think role has a big part to play in that.
Yeah, well, earlier in the season, he really was brilliant in the opening games, and I think he was one of the, like I always say that Sule, McCulloch and Singleton were Glentoran's best players this season to date, and I would stick by that, but he has the last few games, he had been off the boil, Carrick and Enfield in particular. Yesterday, he was a man on a mission, and like you said, you know, driving forward, allowing him to get forward into those attacking positions, because he can pick out a man, he can pick out a pass anywhere on the pitch, and doesn't have to just be this wee short pass. And don't get me wrong, there was a couple of times last night where he tracked back and he won the ball, and you know, Glenmen absolutely lap it up, they love it. It's, you know, they treat that as if it was a goal or a really good assist for a goal. It was, you know, and he loves that too. So he is, you do sort of think, well, that's what he's good at, but he does have a bit more in his locker. And I think Bobby Burns in midfield is important. Last night he was playing out in the wing, basically. So it is important to sort of get him into the midfield. He is probably the most attacking threat. And he probably would have got himself, because Cammy Palmer had a couple of opportunities last night and sort of fluffed his lines. And you think if they had a fall to Bobby Burns, then, I mean, I don't want to mean any disrespect to the lock all, but 6-0 probably did flatter them. It was that sort of rampant, the performance from Glentoran, and such a poor performance from them.
So after your biggest win of the season, your biggest win under the Feeney tenure, tell us what has been the experience with Warren at the helm been like? There, particularly after that last few run of games, and such was the defeat against Enfield, there were calls for a change up. How much is that 6-0 win pour cold water on the flames of dissension? And what does Feeney have to do now between today and the rest of the season to start winning over Glentoran fans? Or for many people, is the jury still out? Is he still in his honeymoon phase?
Warren Feeney didn't get a honeymoon phase at Glentoran, and I mean, that was always going to be the case, rightly or wrongly. He came in and he was already backs to the wall, and I said myself, you know, it was really going to take a sort of string of performances like the start of last season that went round too many Glenmen. And I don't really buy the thing, you know, where it's because he managed Linfield. Most Glentoran supporters, and this comes from a Glentoran supporter who speaks to a lot of supporters, it was because of merit. They people don't believe that what Warren Feeney got the job on merit, rightly or wrongly. You know, you can look at his record and you make a decision for yourself. But that's where the animosity sort of came from. Last week things turned nasty, obviously against Linfield, and I don't think a 6-0 win over Loughall will change that. I don't think that a win next week against Glenavon will change that. I think it's certainly what happens between now and Christmas will determine whether Warren Feeney does win over some Glen men. Now, the Glens have got some big games in there. I know it's only the County Antrim Shield, but the semi-final there. If he maybe wins that, if he beats the Blues in the League Cup, gets to the League Cup final, then he'll maybe have a wee bit more credit in the meter, because I think that it is going to take a lot to win Glen men over. And okay, didn't some of the chants and stuff last week, I didn't agree with. I didn't think it was right. I felt sorry for his son, especially on the bench. But you know what football's like. And yeah, it was just, I don't think you should ever do, I don't think that as a football supporter should ever do that sort of thing against your rivals. I felt uncomfortable when it was Mick against Linfield and Glen men were singing, "You're going to get sacked in the morning." You know, leave that up to them. But, you know, it's, you shouldn't be, I don't think, you know, you pick your moments, and I don't think that was one of the moments. But yeah, he's got an uphill battle. He'll have to rely on his staff. He'll have to rely on his players, because his players have let him down as well. So it's going to be interesting from now until, I wouldn't even say the end of the season, I'd say from now to Christmas, but there's very, very little wiggle room there for any sort of mistakes.
He's got clearly a lot of work to do to start to impress these Glentoran fans. Then we've talked a lot about Loughall on this podcast for the past few weeks. It was a bad night in the office for them. There was plenty of solo errors which led to that situation. They will want to dust themselves off and just forget about that toward night in East Belfast. It was a good night though for the team that is leading the pack, Linfield. This is the Linfield that we've seen for years and years and years. They are very much back. They get the win down at Taylor's Avenue, and it really was a knockdown, drag-out match. That pitch had a role to play. Carrick were well up for the fight, and Linfield just kept plugging away. They get a goal thanks to a Curtis Forsyth own goal, where he knocks it into the goal, but if it isn't him, it was probably going to be Jamie Mulgrew lurking at the back post. Linfield get their second. They look like they're cruising. And then finally something comes off for Carrick, and they get a goal back thanks to an Emmett McGuckin header. A great header it was. And it's squeaky bum time for Linfield for 10 minutes. But they were able to see out the result. Carrick and Stuart King were frustrated and delighted in equal measure. They were delighted that they had such a great performance against Linfield. If recent history has proven anything, they like to play against this Linfield team, but it showed a lot to me that Linfield were able to hold out, get the goals, and not wilt under that pressure, because they've wilted against this Carrick Rangers team before, and that could have easily been some sort of last minute header, set piece goal, and we're sitting here talking about a draw. But what we're talking about now is, after 12 games, Linfield are top of the table, 5 points, which feels like a real hefty cushion that they have right now. And despite them not firing on all cylinders, they are getting the job done week in, week out.
Yeah, well, it's this age-old crisis. What crisis at Linfield? Because if you had read what their supporters were saying in pre-season or at the start of the season, you would have thought that they were a team that were staring down the barrel of a gun. You know, it was like, with no good defenders, we're leaking loads of goals, we're going to rely so heavily on Cooper. And that hasn't really been the case. Linfield do what Linfield do. And last night, you know, I knew someone who was watching the match, and they texted me and they said, "Carrick are really playing well here. You know, they could end up getting something." And then I looked at the score and it was 1-0 Linfield, and then the second obviously came, and I thought, once the Carrick got one back, I did think, you know, Perkis loves a goal against Linfield. Does that doubt of throwing away the win earlier in the season at Windsor Park, does that creep into your mind? But no, Linfield's seen it out. And this early in the season, you know, they say that you can't win leagues this early in the season, but you can certainly lose them. And there's a lot of teams there. You look at Larne, for example. Linfield would be looking at Larne probably as their nearest challengers. They'll probably be looking at Cliftonville too, but they'll maybe think that Cliftonville, looking at previous seasons, I mean, Cliftonville were probably similar to this time last season. They were up there and then they fell away. So Linfield will maybe be thinking that. So to get that 5-point gap at this stage of the season, I mean, speaking to a Glentoran fan here, I think we had a pretty similar gap this time last year. But they're well experienced in doing this sort of thing. David Healy's well experienced in doing this sort of thing. And if they can just get that extended a wee bit more, they'll be very, very difficult to catch.
There's just a feeling that they have more to come. They haven't completely fixed their defensive frailties, but they've done a lot of work on it. They've been tightening things up. They've adapted. East coming in is an extra body there. Now going into this next run of games, they're going to be without Daniel Finlayson for a long while, a player who probably doesn't get the credit that many fans feel like he probably deserves. He's been a big player for them at the back. I'm missing him for a number of games. Could be crucial. It's not like they have lots of ammunition in that area of the pitch. And they win on Friday night with no McKee. But I said this a few weeks ago, Cal McLean is a player who's really stepped up for them. And when you have players like Cooper that can do a bit of magic on the wing, they're trying to blood McBrien into this team, it's probably not the team that you would look at in the league and think, wow, they've just got superstars from 1 to 11. But as a unit, they are doing really, really well. They look very fit and they have the confidence and the bit between their teeth. And that's always been a position that Linfield like being in. And looking then at the other result near the top of the table, Larne not been able to get the 3 points against a 10-man Dungannon Swifts. This is just not the type of things you can afford to do if you want to be making this a tight title race. Lots of games to go, but it feels like to me like I've seen a lot more of these Larne dropping of point games than I ever did by this time last season. There's just something not working for them right now.
It's the difficult second album, isn't it? It's like, it's to say it's really hard to retain a title, and I know it's cliche to say that people raise their game against you, but is it also, I mean, Larne did lose a massive player in Fouad Souley. There's no Andy Ryan now. He's out with a hamstring injury. I've been looking at their team, and I mean, Sean Wants struggled to get into their team, but that's probably fine because they haven't conceded that many goals. It's silly points that they've been dropping, really, when you think about it. Dungannon seemed to be a bit of an Achilles heel for them. And you can't really afford to drop those points. I know what it's like. It's so frustrating when you drop those points against the bottom six. And in my opinion, you look at the sort of full-time teams, and there's very few of the part-time teams that they should be dropping points to, let alone on a Friday night. Larne love Friday nights. I think that they had a ridiculous record, I think, last year on Friday nights. And that's just not translating for them this season. They're going to be kicking themselves because they've got a team full of talent, and it's just not... Like, I wouldn't say it's not quite clicking yet because so early in the season, but they have dropped a lot of silly points here and there, and you can't do that at this level.
There's 4 points dropped to Dungannon alone.
Yeah.
And it's a Dungannon team who give them not literally an open goal, but going down to 10 men gives Larne the chance to push everybody forward and make it happen. They have the talent, and I don't know if it's just a luck thing where it's coming off, is a consistency thing, but more than ever, it's clear that being able to ride the wave when things aren't working for you and get a result when you're playing awful just seems to be the thing that will help you get up there, because bar the odd big result in some of the bigger games, which is something we've criticised Linfield a lot for on this podcast, Larne are slipping now, like 5 draws. That's almost as many as victories they've had. They're not losing, but they've only won 6 and drawn 5. They just don't have this killer instinct. And more than ever this season, when you have all these games at the top, I know the saying is defences win you championships. I know where that comes from. But more than ever in this league, being a bit of a glass cannon probably isn't the worst thing either, because if they're letting goals in, which Larne are still not doing in mass, they've only conceded the 9 still, which we talked about last week. But if they could just score a few more goals, they'll get away with this. And for Dungannon, it's a big swing of a week. You get thumped away in North Belfast and then are able to get a result against the champions once again, it shows that they do have a bit of grit, they do have a bit of determination. They lose their captain, Ethan McGee, or captain for the night, and they could have wilted, but they didn't. They stood tall and defended for their lives. Dungannon are like the Lorne of the bottom six. There's been some good performances, but they're just not getting the results. Like, they've tripped their way to 8 points. They're the only team that's only won once. They've got five draws. It's working out for them right now because they've got 2 points on Ballymena, but you can't nickel and dime your way to safety in this league. So somebody needs to start stepping up and converting these big chances that they're having against Lauren and others into snatch and grab victories.
I feel like when I look at Dungannon, I was looking at the league table last night walking home, and I was thinking, you know, I feel like they should have more points than they do, because you hear so much about the, you know, Dungannon played really well. They obviously got the draw against ourselves. They got two draws against Lorne. And I sort of think that when people talk about Dungannon, they've talked about how well they've played, but yet they've only got 8 points on the board. And I'm like, well, these performances aren't translating in the points. And it's age old story, because I think this similar thing happened last year on their Shields. It was like, you know, Dungannon, they're playing really well, they're playing this great brand of football, they're not getting the points. They need to be careful, because there's almost, you know, to talk about three leagues within the league, in the R league, you know, and they have a danger of sort of creating a mini league between themselves and Glenavon and Ballymena, although Newry aren't quite out of there yet. But yeah, it's a strange one for Dungannon. They need to start getting points on the board. And that's not a bad way to go about it, as last night, down to 10 men as well. I mean, that's a fabulous effort. I'd be delighted if Glentoran got a point against Lorne with 10 men. I'd be delighted if Glentoran got a point with 11 men probably, but if they got a point with 10 men, let alone Dungannon. So fair play, credit where it's due, and you never know, it might kick them on, but again, it's one of these things that they've had maybe these false dawns before.
Another team who was down to 10 men was Newry. For actually a significant part of that game, it felt like it was for well over an hour. Being a man down didn't seem to make a jot of difference for some parts of the game, because in that first half, Cole Rain seemed to just let Newry come at them, and they hit the posts, and there was big saves there, and it took a while for Cole Rain to deal with the situation and work round the deep low block that Newry had. And it's McKendry steps up and gets the goals that gets the victory for them. Two goals for him. He's been a player who you think about rises to the occasion and then fades away. He's this, oh my goodness, he might be one of the best players in the league, and then you don't hear about him for a couple of weeks. Right now he's on one of his hot patches, and his manager is looking for him to keep the fire burning. He is one of these really exciting talents that Cole Rain have, and it's about trying to keep them consistently doing stuff like this. It was the goals that he scored seemed very un-McKendry like. We talked last week about how don't let him on his left foot charging at you into the box. You know, the goal where he's able to pick up the ball and just knock it in showed a bit of striker's awareness. I would always see him as more of a wide player, maybe a dink and dunk number 10, but these are the type of players that need to deliver for Corian week in and week out if they are to make this top six thing a no doubt situation and start playing in a similar part of the table as the other big boys. It's two wins in a row for Corian, and did you hear the story that Kearney almost didn't make it? He was getting fined for being late.
No, I haven't actually heard that. What I didn't miss that one.
He got late coming down Friday night, and he only turned up like 15 minutes before the game. Could have had another Alberto Balde situation.
I was going to say,
you never know. Does that work for managers? But was he registered as incapacitated? Didn't bring himself on. But so yeah, another result for Cole Rain. Newry seemed to be plucky, but that doesn't get you the points on the board. Cole Rain are very much still a work in progress team, and I think watching back the highlights, as I'm sure many of you as well, you'll see that they got away with it with some of those chances that Newry probably should have put away, or was more just unlucky that they didn't go sailing into the back of the net.
It was a great performance from Newry. I watched the highlights myself and I thought, wow, this is... you would not know that they were the team with 10 men. In fact, Corian are probably fortunate that Newry only had 10 men. There was the chance that I think that they were chancing the arm of it. They were trying to say it was over the line. I don't think it was over the line.
Not at all.
No, and it was just one of those, I thought this is going to be one of them games, you know, where sometimes you play with 10 men and it actually spurs you on a bit. But I think that Corian just had a bit too much for them in the end. And Newry will be disappointed because if they had kept all 11 men on the pitch, they could easily have got something. But it just wasn't to be for them.
In the 7th minute, Stephen Bowen got red carded. I knew it was early on. What did you make of it? It was a straight red. He dived in. The way he caught Andy Scott of Coleraine, like he just went flying. He's almost like did like a rolling dive in midair, and there's claims that the boot came up and caught him high on the thigh. I heard that the Newry manager described it as an amber card. I think if you're in amber territory, you're already sitting in red card zone. So it's a frustrating one to see your player do it. But it's, once again, you dive in like that, you're giving the referee the decision to make.
It was a red card. It was so high. That was the thing. It was like, if he had kept his foot a bit low, then... maybe not, but if his foot like went flailing in the air, it's like he lost all control. And if you don't have control of yourself, then it's dangerous. You know, anything can happen. So it was a red card. He can't have too many complaints. I don't even think that was an amber card, as they call it, or an orange card. You hear some commentators saying it was definitely red for me.
There wasn't any complaints when Glenavon fell to the rather electric Cliftonville 1-0, slightly flattered Glenavon. I mean, Cliftonville had chance after chance after chance. I don't know how many times you saw them hit the bar. Unfortunately for me and my fantasy team, the Isle Dreamers, our captain Ben Wilson didn't wrap his foot round one of them. But Rory Hale, one of the players of the season so far, steps up and delivers to seal it home. That could have been a real banana skin for Cliftonville there, but they are able to look tight at the back, as they have done all season so far. They get the goal and they ride out of Moorview Park with the points. For the new boss in Moorview, Steve McDonnell, he talked about how he was positive, he felt as though things were moving in the right direction. You're not expected to get these points or wins against a team like Cliftonville, but that is a could have been. On another day, this was a nil-nil, very similar to the Swifts and Lorne.
I mean, what a finish, by the way, from Hale. I didn't expect him to go there at all. He went to the near post, just at a really tight angle. So that was an absolutely brilliant finish from him. Really, I was, when I seen Cliftonville went 1-0 up, I went, well, that's Ben Wilson, so no, he's on a goal drought now. One game goal drought.
90 minutes, I know. It's one of those things where to listen to this podcast, I know every time I mention Cliftonville, you're thinking you're the boy that predicted it to be all pandemonium and to be all over. And you've just got to say that's the job so far that Little and Magilton have done. They have kept this team really tight. And it's that whole situation where attack is the best form of defence. You cannot throw your men forward to try and exploit any sort of weakness in the back line. If you're constantly panicking that you have Stewart coming from wide, from deep to attack the ball, you have a mix of Wilson and Gormley and Hale, they just have so much firepower. And not the complete opposite of Glentoran, but they just work so well together. We talk about in American football these tandems with quarterback and wide receiver to get the ball to them. Cliftonville have a bit like that. Hale is the quarterback in that team, finding Gormley, finding Ben Wilson in particular. He can find space on a dime. He is so good at picking a player out with very little space to maneuver. So for Cliftonville, it's just about keeping this run going, knitting these results, and they've got a big match coming up. so far they look relentless, but I guess there's no point speculating on if they can keep doing it. It's just about knocking in the goals, and somebody's got to try and figure out how to stop the three-headed monster that is the Reds from North Belfast.
Also credit to Luke Turner at the back, and I think it's a big sort of a big reason why they're having such a good season as well. They're not conceding very many. Last season, Cliftonville fans will tell you that Turner was quite disappointing in comparison to the season before, and it's no coincidence that he's really stepped it up this year. He's been absolutely outstanding for them, and they're having the season that they are. It's obviously quite early days, like I said earlier on. You know, you've got these teams can start the season like this and then sort of fade away, but they do look like, you know, you talk about Warren Feeney earlier on and about his honeymoon period. Jim McGilton was under some scrutiny when he joined Cliftonville too. Cliftonville fans would have thought, you know, would have made you think it was the end of the world that he was joining, but he's done an absolutely fantastic job there. They do have a big game coming up here on Friday night, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and that'll really let us see sort of where Cliftonville are at this stage of the season, and it'll be a tasty one.
There's been lots of talk about this injury, in quotes, crisis at Glentoran, but you got to shine a bit of light on the situation going down on the Shore Road. They get their victory against Ballymena, but in the process they lose Paul Heatley to an injury. How long that could knock him out, we don't know. We all know Callagher's been out. They've been without Winchester for a while. Forsyth has been out of the team. So this is a Crusader side who brought in plenty of bodies in the summer to try and make sure that they have the wiggle room to deal with this situation. Lloyd Anderson's starting at the minute, and they've got plenty on the bench now to try and fill in those holes. But if you were to do a bit of a temperature check around the league on how we thought Crusaders were doing, they were absolutely jalapeno pepper on fire at the start, and right now they're probably the unwanted yellow pepper in your trio of bells, you know. So they aren't as sexy as they used to be, but they're plugging away, avoiding their own drams by taking care of business against the worst team in the league.
Strange one, really. I thought that Crusaders would maybe really quite hammer Ballymena, I suppose, at home, as they've done so many times before with teams that are struggling down the bottom of the league. Adam Leckie's having a great season. I don't think too many would expect him to have been. He scored a good few goals for them. I'm not too sure how many he's on, but he's quite impressive. Disappointing. I'm quite disappointed that James Tielan hasn't really got too many minutes for Crusaders, even with their sort of injury woes. I thought he'd be a big player for them this season. I thought he was a good signing when they signed him. And I did tip them to be the dark horses in the league at the start of the season. I did think they'd be up there in sort of a 1-2, which they are up there. They're not that far off Cliftonville, and we're talking up Cliftonville's chances. But yeah, they'll be happy to sort of get in and get out with the 3 points yesterday. That can always be tricky when you're going into a game against a team struggling down the bottom of the league and you don't expect to lose, but then all of a sudden you've got injury problems yourself, and Heatley's obviously a big miss. He's the Peter Pan of the league. He just never seems to get any worse. Just always seems to keep on staying quite consistent. But no, Stephen Baxter will be happy enough with the 3 points, regardless of whether the performance was there or not.
Charlotte O'Rourke is a player that should be starting to get more love. He's the man that dinks the ball across the box so that Leckie can slot it home. He is a player who gets actually quite high up. When you think of wingbacks for Crusaders, you ultimately go straight to Billy Joe Burns. And as the clock of time ticks on, his venturing runs near the top of the pitch aren't as plentiful as used to be, and it's switched more towards Jarlath O'Rourke, who can whip out a ripper of a shot himself. He's been a big player up that top of the pitch for Crusaders, and in the same way where I'm saying other teams aren't able to get the goals to win the games like this, you've got to give kudos to Crusaders. But like, Ballymena had their chances as well. This seemed to be more of a spirited return for them. Wessendorf seemed to have what looked like one of his better games, rampaging up that wing for a really, really big chance. He can be a hot and cold player. He has all the physical traits to do it. It's just about putting it all together to have a performance where it's usually the final ball which lets him down when he's in front of goal. He can bully defenders very easily, but when he gets that yard and the goal's in front of him, he's got to deliver a bit more, and Balamina will need him to deliver. It was a change in shape down in North Belfast. Johnny McMurray isn't consistently playing for them week on week, and I know I've been very down on Balamina. However, one of these teams at the bottom of the league will no longer be in it come the end of the season, bar some weird registration shenanigans. So it all you can take, if you're not going to get the result, you've got to take the performances and pocket them. And for a Balamina team, which I've seen a few times being fairly poor, this seemed to be a bit more spirited. And over the next few weeks, can they do what no one at the bottom of the league's doing and turn them into results?
You could sort of take everything that you said about Portadown this time last year and just apply it to Balamina. They're just not scoring goals, and that's a massive issue for any team down the bottom of the league. You know, you sort of think Jim Irvine, first in the job in management, is he going to be able to turn it around for them? It's going to be one to sort of keep your eye on. They're losing a lot of games by just the one goal, and you just can't help but feel if they had their very own Paul McIlroy, they did have their very own Paul McIlroy, and of course they let him go. Would things be a wee bit different for them?
It was officially announced last week. Euro 2028 is coming to the UK and Ireland, and as a part of that bid, as we all know, Casement Park was listed within the 10 stadiums. It is the stadium that we all know isn't built. We all know there's no timeline for when it's going to be properly put down. There has been plenty of consternation from many people in football circles about the pitch to have the stadium host games, mainly because with this tournament, one of the key factors of these tournaments is supposed to be legacy, and many people have cried out, well, what legacy is there for a sport that is unlikely to host many football games beyond this tournament? And while we still wait for some of the key facts around when the stadium will come together, if in fact it absolutely 100% will, which we can only assume it will for now, but things could very much change there, because the questions are going to be about funding and how much it's going to cost and where that money is going to come from. What I want to talk about is that there's been a lot of support from those in the RSFA and in NIFL publicly saying, look, we're totally happy for the GAA and Casement Park to get their money and get built. However, if they're getting a big old bowl of ice cream, we want an equally large size bowl, £100 million size bowl of our own ice cream for our stadium. It's incredible to look back and think that it's been well over a decade that teams have been waiting for the sub-regional fund to come their way. As a fan, were you surprised to see leaders both in NIFL and the IFA be so bullish and have real clarity to what they're saying and making public declarations? Okay, Casement can have its money, that's fine, you can make that decision, but they are calling for over £100 million for stadium, because that's quite bullish from them.
Yeah, I mean, it is bullish. It's you know, it's what the fans want to hear. It's, they're sticking up for our sport. They're sticking up for our clubs. It's what we need, this league. I was looking through, you asked on Twitter, actually, for some plans. Has anyone got a list of all the plans that the clubs have in place? And I was going through, and I was looking at them all, and I was like, if £120 million, which is what they came out and said this week, you know, we want £120 million. If £120 million was to deliver all those plans, what a difference that would make the R League. The plans were absolutely incredible. If you put them all together, like, everyone's plans were absolutely amazing. So I think that they do need to stick up for their sport. And it's funny that they said it, because last week when it was announced by the Department of Communities in a statement to the Belfast Telegraph, I was getting ready to go to Windsor Park, and, you know, I was in my supporters club, and I said, you know, they could build a GAA stadium in the back, in my back garden, and play the Euros there, as long as it meant that our fans, our clubs, got their share of the money. Like, it does not bother me one iota that they're gonna, that if they do play the Euros at Casement Park, and if they do, as long as, you know, if the legacy of the Euros is that they give the rest of that money, they give that 120 million to the clubs in our league, then there's a legacy itself. It's, you know, okay, you play your games there, but you just get this pot of money. I'm all for that.
That's clearly what you can read into the tea leaves of what the situation is. There's been people calling out that they would not like these games to be hosted in Casement, but the way we're sitting right now, 5 years from this tournament, it looks as though if Northern Ireland is to host any games, it's Casement or nothing. So with that being the potential situation, that's kind of what we're looking at. It's going, okay, then money will hopefully, or they'll be calling out for the money to come through football in equal measure. And it would be incredible to see that amount of money come through. There's many other non-sports related bodies who would clearly want 120 million or however it might be. Is that enough to pay for all the things that they would like on this dream list? There's obviously factors in regards to health and many other spendings in here in Northern Ireland, but that would be fascinating to see what happens. And at least to me as a fan, it just seems very different to see all these bodies to be so coordinated and to be so clear. And it's not like they're coming with anger or frustration. They're just saying very clearly, this is what we're asking for. So the Euros doesn't seem real to me just yet, because it doesn't mean that Northern Ireland's going to get into the tournament. So there is a situation where Northern Ireland isn't in the Euros, even though this game's being played down the road if you live in Belfast. So a lot more to come. I feel like stage one has happened, and we'll obviously come back to this week to week. But we wrapped up Spooky Friday last week, Friday the 13th. Very sad that there was no Halloween-related regalia, but we've got two more weeks to go to get all your pumpkins and your scream masks out and about. And if you do want to dress up, I've got six games in the top division for you to potentially do that in. We'll start on Friday. And again, we've been alluding to a wee bit on this podcast, it's the big O, Reds meet the Blues at Solitude. It's the streamed game. The last time these teams met, Linfield were the team that finally undid this Cliftonville side. And looking at it, it could be exciting. It could be thrilling. And from what I can remember from that last game, Linfield sat back and let Cliftonville puff themselves out, run out of juice, and then punch them on the nose with the sucker punch. I wonder if they're particularly away from home, is that's what Linfield's plan will do. It's going to be a lot harder without Daniel Finlayson, but the first task Linfield will have is trying to restrict the scoreline and counter.
I think that earlier in the season, it's probably a bit easier to do that. Everyone's fitness isn't quite up to scratch. When you're this many games in, I think it is harder to do that, and especially on a smaller pitch like Solitude, when it can be tough to expect someone to run themselves into the ground and get exhausted. It's going to be really difficult to call this one, because obviously you've got two teams who are in form. Linfield, they're not even conceding that many either, to be honest with you. And obviously we know about Cliftonville's defensive record. Like, lately Linfield haven't been conceding that many. They've been doing very well all over the pitch, and they're quite solid, just quite reliable. I do think it'll probably end up a draw. I don't think any team will want to lose it. If Linfield win it, then wow, they're putting more distance between themselves and Cliftonville. And again, if Cliftonville will be thinking like that too, they're like, if we lose it, then it's gonna be difficult to claw those points back.
It feels like this is a game that can echo that Cliftonville against Lorne game earlier in the season, the 5:30 kickoff, where it's a goal apiece and they both settle for it, and it isn't a particularly thrilling and exciting game. I would love a goal in the first 3 minutes, because it would just blow the top right off this fixture. The one thing we all want is for this to be a complete shootout, and that's exactly actually what Cliftonville will want. If it's a shootout, you've got to believe that they have more ammunition, more firepower at home to be the people that have the most goals come the end of it. And the thing is with Linfield is that when they are hot, they are hot. So the pressure's more on Cliftonville, because if Cliftonville lose this, it's an 8-point swing now at the top of the league. So it screams a draw. It just screams a draw. So, I'm going to have to try and be, you know, predict as accurately as possible, which is why I'm going to have to go for 1-1. But this could be a big Joe Gormley game. Again, you said I said to Swing that it could go to 8 points. A win for Cliftonville, it's down to 2 points, and they are feeling themselves. So a big game for all of the attackers on both sides incoming. A team who wants to kick on their season finally is Lorne, and they welcome in the current bottom six frisky team in Carrick Rangers. This is the, oh, is this the East Coast Collision? It is. Lorne Carrick again down at Inver Park. What will go down, we'll have to see. Can Danny Perkis ping it in from 50 yards? This is a Carrick team who look to have finally found their mojo. They're interlinking with each other very, very well. And if they're going to get a big win against Lorne, this is likely to be the time. And the reason why I'm predicting Lorne winning is because the last three or four times I've said, if this is the time that this team's going to win, it's going to be now, and it always goes the other way. So Lorne might come back and flick them on the nose. Do you feel confident in this Carrick train right now after they did you boys down at Taylor's Avenue? I
think that Carrick will obviously be a bit sort of, they'll probably be upbeat even though they got beat by Linfield. I think they'll be very, very happy with their performance. Lorne will have their tails between their legs. They'll not want to drop more points, certainly at home. But I do think that Lorne probably will come out on top here. I think that in these sort of games, you know, it's another Friday night game on their lights at Inver Park. And I think that Lorne might just show a bit too much for Carrick. Obviously, Andy Ryan, you know, I mentioned earlier, he's out injured. I'm not sure how long he's out for. Apparently, it's a hamstring injury. So that could be problematic. But they have, like, Lorne have plenty of firepower. And surely they're going to have a bit much for Carrick. You know, Carrick are doing quite well lately. At the end of the day, it's 11 players against 11 players. And you would say that Lorne have the better 11. So if football was simplistic, then yeah. But you just never know. Carrick are one of them teams, going to be one of these teams this season. A bit like Glenavon in previous years, I suppose, where they can go anywhere and take points off anyone when least expecting it. But I do think that Lorne might bounce back this season. I would say it's probably going to be quite tight. I would say maybe a 2-1 to Lorne. I do fancy Carrick to score.
You're so right. Carrick to scream previous seasons. Glenavon, as soon as you think they're duffed and they're not going to do anything, they go on a great streak and make life awful for the top teams. And then when you think they're going to start wrecking the rest of the bottom six and start bullying the other ones, they lose 3-1 to Dungannon or something like that. So yeah, I totally get that. The one thing which I've highlighted the odd time with Carrick Rangers is that they've got a lot of experience at the back, but they've been caught out a lot as well, and they've given away plenty of needless goals. They aren't as watertight as they need to be. They're kind of this team, I'm saying other teams at the top, they need to be these glass cannons. And when you have a Lorne side, the way Dungannon was able to deal with them is to be tight and compact, and that's not really Carrick's bag. They're throw boys forward and let Ben Tilney be 80 yards up the pitch rather than 5 yards close to his goal. So I think Lorne will exploit that very well. Could be high score, but yeah, I kind of like the 2-1 scoreline itself. Going to Saturday's slate of fixtures, Dungannon host Crusaders. Dungannon are getting a bit of a groove down at Stagmar Park after getting that result against Lorne. Can they do it against the Crews? The Crews have been able to cut through Dungannon very well recently, in the same way Dungannon's awkward for Lorne, Carrick's awkward for Linfield. I'm not recalling many times that Dungannon didn't get rolled over by the Crews, but this is a Crews side who might have to add Paul Heatley to their lists of unavailable.
Yeah, I do think the Crusaders are probably get the result here against Dungannon. You know, we were talking earlier about Dungannon, how they can't continue going on playing well and not getting the points, although they obviously got a good point against Lorne. I think the Crusaders will go to Dungannon and just have a bit much for them. They always seem to get the result. It's just one of them teams. It was like very much like Glentoran and Dungannon in the last few years, like until the recent 0-0, the Glens always seemed to get the better of Dungannon, even when they didn't play well. And I think it'll be pretty similar for Crusaders. And I even think with those, with the players missing, I just think that they'll go there and they'll not make any mistakes. And I think the Crews will probably fly under the radar a wee bit. No one's really talking about them. And they'll quite like that.
a team that needs to have all their best players ready to rock. Losing McGee just makes it even harder for Dungannon, especially a team that's been short on goals, trying to get goals. They want his tricky ability out wide. And I think Leckie will be a big factor. I'm going to say 2-0 to the Crews. Glentoran host their ever-plucky rivals in Glenavon. Simply, this just needs to be another win. And this would be a huge coming out party for McDonnell if he was able to get any sort of result against Glentoran. Bar that result in the cup, they're looking for something in the league under his stewardship. It isn't in massive amount of numbers, only played a few games, but Glentoran will want to score early in the same way they did against Loch Awe and just keep piling on the pressure.
The Glentoran and Glenavon games down the years, you could flip a coin and you're just not sure what's going to happen. But I think on Saturday, we're going to have to guard, Glentoran are going to have to guard against complacency, and I think that that'll be made clear by Warren Feeney. You know, we cannot afford to go out there or to go out at the Oval and think, oh, 6-0 last week, more of the same this week. Be interesting to see what sort of formation he goes with, if he sticks with that 3-5-2, if he sticks with the same personnel, if he trusts his personnel. Glenavon looked pretty unlucky against Cliftonville. They could easily have got a point there, seemingly. So they'll come to the Oval as well, looking to maybe a bit of a free hit, because going by what the manager said last week, he said you don't expect to play teams like Cliftonville and get 3 points. So he might go with the same attitude against Glentoran, and the Oval can be one of them places sometimes where if you can get your back, Glentoran backs to the wall, if you can get the fans and the players back, then you can get something. But I do have to say, I think that the Glens will go out and get a win last week or next week. I think that earlier in the season against Glenavon, they were fairly lucky, to be honest. The very late winner by Jay Donnelly after brilliant work from Shane McCartan. But I do think I hope it'll be more comfortable on Saturday.
Buoyed by keeping things low against Cliftonville, I kind of think Glenavon's going to get some. I think it's going to be a draw. I think it's going to be a 0-0 draw after throwing the ball into the net 6 times to not be able to score at all just feels very Glentoran right now. So I'm going to go 0-0. My favourite game of the weekend, Cliftonville against Limfield's going to be a big blockbuster. But if all 6 games were all at the same time and I had a big remote to say you can watch one of these games right now, it would have to be Loch Awe against Newry. This are two teams who love to push forward. They aren't always the most free-flowing once they get the ball into the box, but these are two very different teams trying to play, quote-unquote, the right way, their own way. They play without too much trepidation. They would rather live positively than live in fear. What that means when Newry miss out on trying to get a result against the Bansiders at home, and Loch Awe are starting to feel a bit sad for themselves after being on the buzz boat, they fall back down to earth after a thumping against Glentoran. For a team that looks so tight at the back, they've now let in what, close to 10 goals in 2 games. They'll need to turn that around. So I just can't tell how this is going to go. This will be a game that will just go back and forward, and it will be really on the day who prepares their team the right way and who is able to figure each other out the best. I think Newry might nick this 2-1, you know. I just think they'll be able to get at this Loch Awe back line, and Loch Awe will let them into it, despite the fact that, would you say, if you were the man making the odds, would you say Loch Awe's the favourite in this game? Mainly because they're at home?
I would say Loch Awe's the favourite, but I do think it's going to be one of them games. It's like a 3-2. You know, like one of them high-scoring games where one just about edges out the other. I do agree with you. I think it's going to be a very exciting game. Obviously, earlier in the season, Loch Awe went to the Newry Showgrounds and won 3-0.
First game of the season.
First game of the season. Like it's, and that was would have been a shock to Newry. And I think that they will be disappointed, Loch Awe, from losing 6-0, obviously, to Glentoran. But I mean, I think that earlier in the season, Carrick lost the Linfield, or the Crusaders rather, and then went and played Linfield and got the draw. So that can sometimes spur teams on to do well. But I do think it's going to be one of those high scoring sort of 3-2, maybe even a 4-3 sort of game. a red card in there somewhere, because there seems to be loads of red cards in the bottom six this season. If you had to make me pick some one of the teams, I think I would go with Loughgall, because I think they are the better team.
If any team is able to pick 3 points out of the bag come the end of this game, it would just be huge for their season. This is why this league is going to be so tight now at the bottom of the league. Newry have got 10 points, Loughgall have got 15 points, with Ballymena on 6, Glenavon 7, Dungannon 8. 3 points for Newry would see them, and all depends how Ballymena go, 7 points away from bottom. That's massive. Loughgall, a win if Ballymena aren't able to get any kind of result there. 18 points, 12 points off bottom. You know, Loughgall, they have lots of slippage, but they can't afford to let these other teams win and drag them down. They need to have a ruthless streak in themselves, so they aren't starting to worry about serious relegation. I think they're a few wins away from being all but safe, but huge game for both. But I do think Newry could just sneak that, and that would be a massive result for Newry if they were able to get one back on Loughall. And the final game is the North Coast Derby. It's Coleraine against Ballymena. And you've just got to believe that despite it being at the showgrounds in Ballymena, that Coleraine just look the better side in these games. And Ballymena are likely to be without Colin Coates at the back, so maybe they can hold on and counterpunch them. But for Coleraine, they will let themselves down if they don't go for the jugular from the off, because the longer this game goes without there being a goal for Coleraine, the more you just make this nervy and give Ballymena a chance. And they cannot give Ballymena a chance in this game, because I know they're your rivals, but they're also the bottom side in the league, and you can't slip up here.
Yeah, I think that Ballymena have a pretty decent record at the showgrounds, at the Ballymena showgrounds against Coleraine. I think they won there last season in the league, and then the year before as well, because I think they only played each other once, obviously, with Ballymena finishing in the bottom six. So I think they won there the year before as well. It's one of them ones where you think, okay, Coleraine will probably go here and steam, and you expect them to steamroll Ballymena or beat Ballymena because they're the much better team. But usually when a team's struggling and they come up against their derby rivals, their manager can't bio in, something happens, and they get that victory. And you wouldn't put it past Ballymena to do that. But I do think that Coleraine will have a bit much for Ballymena, and I think that, you know, if you're going to put a score line on it, it's going to have to be 1-0, because Ballymena seem to only lose games by one goal.
I thought Coleraine were living dangerously, and they got out of jail free last week from a couple of those set pieces. And yes, Ballymena are unlikely to have Colin Coates. I think I heard talk of there being a knee issue. I just foresee it being a set piece that undoes Coleraine in the same way that happened with their game against Dungannon, and I think it's going to be late. I'm going to say 1-1, and it's going to be one of these set pieces, one of these big lumps of Ballymena getting the goal, and a draw here would probably feel like a victory for Ballymena in a situation like this. So I'm going to say 1-1. Matthew, great to have you on the podcast once again. Of course, you have your own Glentoran flavoured podcast, Shout at the Oval, which is always out there for fans of any team to go back and listen to some of the players, ex-Glentoran players, obviously, and talk about their time, their history, also being a Glentoran player, but being an Irish League player in general. But recently, you've taken on a new podcasting venture. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so at the end of last season, I was asked to come on to the Ulster Footballer of the Year Awards Organising Committee, along with Ken Moody of Castlereagh Glentoran Supporters Club and Bobby Carlyle, who many Irish League fans will know as a former winner of the award, Cliftonville goalkeeper, and of course, pundit for the BBC. They've asked me to help them sort of modernise it, bring in use of new social media. So I've decided to start a podcast, the Ulster Footballer of the Year podcast, which I hope to go around all the grounds in the Premiership, but also maybe some Championship and other grounds, and speak to players, officials, managers, just about their club, about the season, about previous seasons, maybe about their careers, about their experience at their club, raise a bit of profile for not just the award. It's the Ulster Football of the Year is the most prestigious award in the country to win. It's voted for by a panel, and although it's organised by the Castlereagh Glentoran Supporters Club, it's completely unbiased. There's several journalists and former managers and current manager, or whatever, on the panel. So raise some awareness of that award and what it means, but also bring fans closer to each of the clubs and just have a bit of fun with it. The first one's going to be Lauren, and I haven't even announced who the guests are, but here's an exclusive. It's going to be Andy Ryan and Sean Want. So going to go down and speak to them this week. Hopefully get at least one episode a month out, because it's going to be hard to release that alongside my podcast. So go for one a month. I'll maybe get more in, especially in the sort of Belfast clubs, but going to be putting some serious miles in the motor this season.
Happy days, happy days. Big question you got to ask, and it can be on the mic or off the mic. Did Sean Want to pick the number two because he wants the fans to sing Sean Want to Break Free? Because I'm so disappointed that is not a song. But now, of course, Lauren fans, Sean Want to Break Free, it is yours and you can take it with. Or maybe it was all by design by Sean Want. I don't know if you're able to say this or able, like, you don't want to spoil your ballot halfway through, but just from your own opinion, if there was a front runner for the award after once around the circuit, after 11, now 12 games played so far, who do you think it would be? Who's kind of in the driver's seat when it comes to Ulster Player of the Year?
So here's the thing, in the podcast, I'm going to actually, I don't know if you've seen Diary of a CEO, his podcast, and he asks for his guests at the end to write a question for the next guest. Well, I'm going to ask each of my guests to write anonymously who they predict at the end of the season will be the Ulster Footballer of the Year. And then at the end of the season, we'll look back. Mine at the start of the season, if you had asked me in August who I thought that the Ulster Footballer of the Year would be for this year, I would have said Andy Ryan.
Wow.
Obviously, now it's probably looking like Ben Wilson, and a few weeks ago, it probably would have been Cooper. So it's one of those things that it's like it changes all time. This time last year, it would have been Connor McManaman, and then obviously Leroy Miller on it. But if you ask me right now, I think it'd be Ben Wilson, but that can change at the drop of a hat, and usually the champions play a big part in that. And even, but you see, if you look at Linfield, obviously Cooper's a great player, but if you even look there, how you pick, there's no player out there that you think has been run away their best player. There's just been loads of them. Whereas at Cliftonville, you've got Ben Wilson's clearly being the front runner there.
Well, he's up until yesterday, up until the game there on Friday, he had scored more goals than had been played, you know, over a goal a game ratio. So that's pretty good. So you've got to say that he is the front runner. But, you know, goals aren't the only thing that count. And
yeah.
You know, I think I've said in this podcast that Ben Kennedy was my prediction at the start of the season. He's had a few niggly injury issues where we all saw his big boom game against Carrick and a few of the games other side of that. He's not busting right now, but he isn't as dominating a player as he can be. So, yes, I look forward to listening to that. I look forward to bringing up who's the current front runner of Ulster's Player of the Year, as I usually will. And Matthew, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to chatting to you very soon.
Thanks very much, Peter. It's been a pleasure as always.
If I can let you in on a little bit of a secret, slightly different recording schedule this week for big, boring, pedantic reasons, but in the world that I currently live in, which to you is the past, I've just wrapped up recording, and it's a day where Northern Ireland beat the worst team in men's international football, which, you know, we should have. But then Ireland, who were supposed to be the best men's rugby team in the world, lose. The one time, like, we're good at something, we're still losing. And against probably the team that's usually the best in the world. So, hey, what you gonna do when you lose to New Zealand and their big, cool Darth Vader kits? Anyway, if you are here listening, thank you very much. You must be very keen. And if you are keen, you should make sure that you follow or subscribe or whatever it's called on whatever the podcast player that you use. It's probably different for all the thousands or hundreds or probably just a dozen that there is out there. But if you use one of them, like Spotify, you can go on and hit follow or whatever it is. And that means you'll get a wee notification saying, got it. Peter's just uploaded one, which means you have to flick and go, has he uploaded yet? Has he uploaded yet? Because I know that can be a bit annoying. But that's really handy, and hundreds of yous do. So you're going to be in a cool club if you do it. Another cool club to be a part of, where there's hundreds and even thousands, is my social media club. It's not really a club. It's free to join. You can follow this pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I promise it's fun. It's at Kicking Match on all of them. And as well as that, you can see what your smart speaker does when you ask it to play Kicking Match, an Irish League podcast. But no spoiler, it plays the latest podcast. But it's hand-free, so it's pretty handy. So yeah, another big week. Thanks for listening, I'm going to say to you now, goodbye. I'm going to say to you now, thanks for listening. I'm going to say to you now, enjoy your football next week. Until then, cheerio.